Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And this afternoon we have a fascinating guest. Her name is Penny Little. She's put out a video called Dust, and I believe it is it Dust, Deceit, and Deception, or Dust, Deception, and Deceit?
9/11, Dust and Deceit.
Dust and Deceit. Well, it's a fascinating video. We watched it the other evening, and certainly I think it's something that our listeners will learn a great deal from, because it not only talks about the dust and the what happened, but the question is, there's so many unanswered questions, so much information that we have not been told, that has been actively suppressed from the American people. And if there's nothing to hide, then would it be fair to ask, why are they concealing it? And so with that as a background, Penny, what brought you to a position where you took the time and the effort and the expense to put together this video?
Well, when the towers came down, I was watching like everybody else, and I was stunned. And none of what the media was saying for me rang true about any of it. And so I became interested in the issue of 9/11. But the issue that kept drawing me was I kept hearing about these responders, the heroes, the people who went down to work on the dust pile, and they were coughing and they were getting sick. Because, like, I'm a storyteller. I'm a filmmaker. I'm interested in people's stories. I'm not like a scientist or an expert on any particular subject. I get interested in something that I get passionate about. And I became passionate about the fact that they were lying to the people of New York, out and out lying to them. They knew that the air was not safe. In fact, anyone that looked at that dust cloud, when you first saw it and you saw people running from the dust cloud, and you think fire or smoke or volcano, and you think, whoa, what would it have been like to have been caught in that dust? And then, of course, the fires burned and burned for months afterwards. And so people obviously were being exposed to something, yet the government was lying. And so when I see injustice, that kind of motivates me. And I saw a big injustice. And I was funded to make a first trip to New York. And then I started using my own money, basically, to make several other trips to interview some of the experts, to interview some of the victims. And the more I investigated, the worse it started to sound. People were not getting the help that they needed. They were even denying that they were sick. They closed the registry. There were so many things that were wrong with this story that I just felt compelled. I mean, it took me about a year and a half to finish the film. I mean, any documentary film takes a lot of effort. And so I kept going back, and finally I felt I had an overview of the subject, because I really feel that people need to know about this. This was a national disaster. This wasn't just a little isolated thing. This was 9/11, a national disaster.
And I think what was really so significant is they lied to the people who worked on the pile. They told them that the air was safe, and they knew it was not. They had testing. They knew it was not. And if they'd lie to those people and really destroy the lives of, you know, literally thousands of Americans. There's one lawsuit that involves 8,000 of those people, and well over 400 of that 8,000 has cancer of one sort or another. What are the chances that could have happened? And if they knew that this was toxic and they lied to us about it, and they lied to those people, what else are they lying about?
That's
about
a
what
good
happened
question.
That day? We'll be back in just a moment here with Penny Little and her book, Dust and Deceit. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Penny Little. And Penny is a film producer, and she's put together an excellent video. It's called Dust and Deceit. And basically it goes into the massive dust cloud that descended upon New York at the time that the Twin Towers and then Building 7 came down, and the fact that the government and the EPA and Christine Todd Whitman, the head of the EPA, kept telling people that there was no danger. And, you know, initially they told people that they should not wear masks, they should not wear respirators. Why it might frighten people to think there was something wrong with the dust. And they lied to the people because they knew it was going to be dangerous. And today many of these people are respiratory cripples. Their lives have certainly been destroyed as a direct result of the lies that were told at that time. So you pick up the story there, Penny. As you talk to the people there, they're pretty heart-rending tales, aren't they?
Extremely heart-rending tales. I mean, these are the people that ran. They don't run away from disaster. They run toward danger. A lot of them were the people who worked on the pile. A lot of them were the volunteers. One of the volunteers, Rachel Hughes, she basically can't even walk up a flight of stairs now. She has 30% lung capacity. Immediately, she broke out in a rash and these sores that were bleeding all over her body, her hair, her scalp, and her arms. And she's young. She's at the peak of her life. She was had a career, and now she sold her car, her house, she has medical bills. She can't get help. That's just one story out of thousands. There's so many of these stories where they get caught in this runaround from agency to agency. People have died without getting the help that they need. They've applied for workman's compensation and whatever help they can try to get, but you also have to keep in mind that these people are sick, and it's hard for them to even get up. And when you talk about the dust cloud, I mean, you have to think about it being a giant incinerator that burned for months. It wasn't just dust. It was like it was a toxic pool of all these known carcinogens. I mean, just to think about it, just think about when you pulverize a computer, like the fluorescent lights and all of the plastic and all the stuff that was in those buildings, and asbestos and silica, fiberglass. I mean, the list just keeps going on, and some of it's just really horrific. They said that the air had the pH balance of Drano, so it was like inhaling Drano, drain cleaner.
Now, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Penny Little. Well, our guest is Penny Little, and she's put out a DVD. It's called Dust and Deceit. And it goes into the background, of course, of what happened, and what happened really to the people who worked on the pile. And so many of them have really been permanently incapacitated. And, you know, tragedies do happen. And it was a very unfortunate situation all around. But what was not unfortunate was the purposeful and the intentional lying of high government officials, specifically Christine Todd Whitman and Mayor Giuliani and so many of the other people there that frankly lied to the people of New York and to the people working there who were trying to clean up the debris at the Twin Towers and at Building 7 about the safety. Oh, it was perfectly safe. Nothing to worry about. Why, we've checked the air samples and there's nothing there. You don't go in and you don't have to wear a mask and you shouldn't wear a respirator. And we'll tell some of the things that, because initially the people were discouraged from trying to protect themselves, weren't they?
Absolutely. Not all the agency, you know, it's not that agencies are bad, but that they were told because there was this fear that if people didn't give the appearance that life would go on after the attacks and Wall Street could be reopened. And they did photo ops where Bush and Giuliani went down there and they weren't wearing masks. Of course, they were only there for a couple of minutes. But they wanted to give the appearance of normalcy. And this is just so unfair to the people. People deserve to be told if they're being exposed to something toxic. And, I mean, it's a crime, actually, because there was so much in the air. It wasn't, this was completely, had never happened before. They don't even know what the effects of this toxic brew of chemicals and dust is going to, what kind of effect it's going to have. It had immediate effects. There was the World Trade Center cough, which happened right after. I mean, within days, people were coughing, and people were spitting up black gunk out of their lungs. So, I mean, they knew that something was wrong, and it smelled and it was burning and the dust was lingering in the air for months. I mean, you could the smoke from the fires was there. The plume spread out over Brooklyn. You could see it from the satellite photo that this was not something that just went away. And Christine Todd Whitman, Giuliani, they basically disregarded the information they had and took away the cautionary language out of the releases. And when people hear it over and over again, the press says it, the air is safe to breathe. Well, and Giuliani and everyone else is saying the air is safe to breathe. You're going to think, well, yeah, the air is safe to breathe. It's safe to go back to work. Yeah. And so employers told their employees, no, you shouldn't wear a mask. Yes, you have to come back to work.
And, of course, the interesting thing was that the EPA had prepared a report that said it was toxic, and pressure was apparently put on Christine Todd Whitman from the White House to alter the report. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. James Connaughton from the Council on Environmental Quality ordered the EPA to tone down the report. And it wasn't just him. I mean, it looks like it came from Condoleezza Rice's office as well. I got that information just as I was finishing up the film, so I just included a little tiny snippet of that. But it came from high places, and they just did not want people. They wanted Wall Street to be reopened. They didn't want people to be afraid of the dust. They wanted life to go on just as normal. And once they covered it up, of course, then they had to spend a great deal of energy perpetrating the cover-up.
And so once you lie, why, then you got to lie about your lie, and then you got to lie about your lie about your lie.
Exactly.
But of course, when government officials lie and people's lives are destroyed, and the callous indifference to human suffering. And so many of these people were, certainly the firemen and the policemen were in excellent physical shape. Many of them were, you know, very athletics and marathon runners. And now they can barely breathe, and they're beginning to die off. And, of course, as we mentioned, large numbers of them have cancers, unexplained cancers because of the carcinogenic substances they inhaled. And the idea is, well, nobody's really responsible. Everybody wants to deny complicity. And to this very day, Christine Todd Whitman says, well, I told everybody how toxic it was, and she's frankly lying. But government officials do lie. That is the thing, and nothing's ever done when they lie to the American people.
Well, you know, we deserve to know the truth, though. That's the thing. I mean, the whole function of government is to protect and serve. And we deserve, New Yorkers deserve to know the truth. And yes, governments lie and officials lie, but that doesn't make it right.
Nope.
And it, when you have so many people's lives on the line, that makes it criminal.
Well, I think there is criminal activity there, but we can be sure that nothing will ever be done. In fact, everybody responsible for the tragedy on 911, why, they were all promoted. Nobody was ever fired. Not one person was fired. Not one person was demoted. They were all appraised and promoted for the fine job they did on the time leading up to this so-called surprise attack on the Twin Towers. Well, what are some of the things you learned about what happened that day and certainly as you analyze, you know, this dust and deceit?
Well, there's just so much information. First of all, I believe that the government's official story about 9/11 is a conspiracy theory because it's not factual. None of that. There's so much wrong with that story.
Well, what's wrong with this story? I mean,
yeah,
so many people. So I had a gentleman on yesterday who doesn't like the government, but he says, I refuse to believe, of course, that they're not telling the truth about 9/11.
Well, you know, when I think about it, I don't like to make speculative kinds of statements that I can't really back up. I tried in my film to sort of stick to the things that I thought could really nail them, because I did want to cast more doubt on the official story and maybe spark an interest in those who haven't questioned the official story. And because with this issue of the dust, there's no need to speculate. It's hard, cold fact. There are emails. There are trails. There's actual deception that you can document. And so with 9/11 itself, I want people to question the 9/11 Commission. I want people to question what the official story was. And this particular film I made because the actions of this government are just so criminal. It's like a, well, in my mind, they're like a bunch of thugs, and they think they can get away with anything. And so this particular film, I wanted to focus on things that I know are true.
Well, what are those specific things? Certainly, nobody can question that there was this terrible cloud of dust, that the rescue workers and the people who worked on certainly removing the debris were lied to, and repeatedly lied to, and forced not, at least initially, not to wear any sort of protection. Even when they did wear protection, they wore a paper mask, which really did not protect their lungs at all. But what are some of the other things where we have not been told the truth?
Well, one of them is that Kate Jenkins, who is the EPA whistleblower, she basically discovered that the facts that she had uncovered, they had FOIA'd, Freedom of Information Act, did not gel with the information that they had on their website, that there were completely different numbers. So that's one thing that is absolutely striking about this.
No, whose website was this?
The EPA's website themselves. And that discrepancy in and of itself is a clue that something is wrong. And I think that the fact that the media was basically, I don't know if it was instructed, but they just didn't want this story to come out. Julie, one of the deputy mayors, called the New York Daily News, and basically they had the editor that was in charge of covering the story removed.
In other words, because he was going to tell the truth, and they didn't want the truth out? Is that the implication?
Yeah, they didn't want the truth out. So when people are trying to hide something and they're trying to control the media or remove editors or tell writers not to write the story, you have to be a little suspicious. So there's a clue.
Well, you know, one of the most amazing things to me about this tragedy is there are 1,100 bodies that have never been recovered. No part of them, 1,100 bodies, never recovered. Now, you would expect that if the buildings had simply collapsed, as we were told, the bodies might very well have been crushed, but the bodies would have been there. But there are 1,100 bodies that simply disappeared. And I always like to say, were they crushed when the building collapsed? Or were they vaporized when the building exploded? We don't know what happened, but the one thing is that they don't want us to know either. And they held the 9 commission hearings, and there were 1,200 people who testified, most of them in secret, and over 1,100 testimonies of people who were there, who knew what happened, were sealed for 50 years and sent to the National Archives, where they can never be viewed by the American people. And the question is, why would they conceal all that information? Are they trying to keep Osama bin Laden from learning what happened?
Why would they keep it from him? What does he have to do with any of this?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, because the only other alternative is they're trying to keep it from the American people.
Right. And in regards to that, I mean, again, you can speculate all you want about what happened. You just can tell that what they say happened doesn't feel like it's really what happened. I mean, when you have pulverized dust to microscopic levels and you can't find the bodies, you have to ask questions.
And, of course, so many of the computers were just vaporized.
Right.
So much of the equipment in that building was just vaporized. How do you vaporize equipment like that?
That's a really good question. And it's those very fine particles that get down into your lungs, and they don't come out, and that's what causes the cancer. You know, that's what causes the debilitating diseases. So when you have, it's not just the large particles, a lot of them were coughed out, but those very, very fine, some of the microscopic particles being...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back with Penny Little. Well, Penny, about how many people do you think have been incapacitated? Do we have any idea how many people were incapacitated who worked there at the site?
Well, I think there are probably 40,000 people who actually worked at the site, and then you have to look at the workers. I mean, I've heard all kinds of figures as far as how many people have probably been affected. It's not just tens of thousands. It's maybe 100,000 or more people probably will have some consequence because of this dust.
Well, weren't a lot of children actually sent back to the adjacent schools? Get them back into school right away? And yet, of course, these schools really had a dust in them as well.
And they weren't properly cleaned. That's the other thing. That the testing was not done down to the levels that they needed to do, and the ventilation systems were not necessarily cleaned properly. A lot of times buildings, one apartment or one room in a, you know, one building would be clean, but Jason's space wouldn't be cleaned. And the school, Stuyvesant School, I focused a bit on that in the film, because these were kids that were sent back to their class really soon after 9/11, and right next to the school, the intake ducts, was where the barge was, where all the toxic debris was being taken away. And so they weren't just breathing the dust and the stuff that was trapped in their classroom. There was this barge there that was largely uncovered, and they were exposed to that. And this dust, there was something really vicious in this dust. I helped my friend Rachel move some of her boxes, and it still had the dust coating all of her files. And when I touched the dust, it just touched my hand. It broke out in welts. I'm not an allergic kind of person. My hand just immediately had these little red welts on it just from touching this dust years later. So it's not gone. That's the other thing. If people didn't thoroughly clean their apartments, and this was a voluntary cleanup, and people were told to take a wet rag and clear the dust off their windowsills and to wash their plants with water and stuff like that, which is completely unsafe. Because the dust, they should have been wearing hazmat suits in order to clean their apartments. And the same thing with the school. I mean, it's like the parents fought, and the activist organizations down there fought to get the ventilation system cleaned. And they still weren't convinced that it was clean at Stuyvesant. So then you have Chinatown. You have all these adjacent areas where they only did testing and some cleaning, south of Canal Street. Nadler said, well, like, was there a Star Trek-type force field up there that prevented everything north of Canal Street or anything in Brooklyn from being affected? There were just so many ridiculous things that went on in regards to this that it's mind-boggling.
Well, of course, one of the explanations was given was that the powers that be, the PTBs, wanted to get Wall Street open. In other words, they would do anything to get Wall Street open and get the, you know, the stock market moving up and get the economy stabilized again. And they felt that these people were sort of expendable. It was more important for the psychology of the people of the country to get Wall Street open than to worry about the lives of a few thousand people.
Right.
Do you think there's any truth to that thought?
Oh, there's absolutely. It was actually in the report. It was in Nikki Tinsley's report that they wanted to get Wall Street open. They were quite blatant about that. But when I interviewed
Hold that thought right there.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Penny Little. And Penny really has studied this and gone over the reports. And apparently one of the major motivations immediately after the 9/11 attack was to get Wall Street open again. And they had actually made reports and said, look, you know, we're not concerned about the danger to all these people. We've got to get Wall Street open. We've got to get the economy going. I mean, the stock market has taken a terrible hit. We've got to get things back to normal as soon as possible, even if there is a danger. Is that really pretty much what they said? Did they acknowledge in these reports that you've read that there was a danger, but we're going to ignore it for the greater good, or what?
Well, they didn't exactly put it that way in the report, but the report basically alluded to the fact of the need to get Wall Street open. It's in Nikki Tinsley's report. I don't have that in front of me, so I can't read the specific language. But
we'll give you a little poetic license if you want to tell us in essence what you think it said.
Well, they, basically they said in order to get Wall Street open, they, you know, they needed to get people back to work. And the I interviewed Robert Goulart, who worked for the Securities and Exchange Commission. He worked in Building 7, and he's a victim in that he has some lung problems. He has various problems with the respiratory system. And he said, well, yeah, it's understandable. We need to get Wall Street open. But we didn't need to do it in such a way that put all the children at risk, that put the residents at risk, that put all the people down there at risk. Basically, what really needed to happen was an evacuation. And I guess they just didn't want to do that because that would make people afraid as well. He also, it was suggested, I don't know if it was him or someone else suggested, that Wall Street is basically a bunch of hard drives, that they could have taken those hard drives and moved them somewhere else, maybe Madison Square Garden. They could have relocated temporarily the hub of Wall Street instead of endangering the workers. Now, why is that so difficult? It seems to me that there's a problem with thinking here, a problem with it's very short-sighted, narrow-minded, and I don't know how else to describe this thinking, maybe even psychopathic, because when you have people that are so callous that they're willing to put possibly hundreds of thousands of people at risk, to me that's bordering on sociopathic behavior.
I certainly agree with you, and I fear that we do have some people who do not have a moral conscience or a sense of what's right and wrong. They look at the world differently than moral people do. Well, who were some of the other people that you interviewed?
Well, let's see. I interviewed Kate Jenkins, who was the EPA whistleblower. I mentioned her. Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, Gerald Nadler.
You actually had two congressmen there. One was a congresswoman and one was a congressman.
Right.
And both of them were anxious to try to get to the bottom of what happened. But have they, do you know if they've been able to get anything accomplished?
Well, I think it was in 2002, Nadler was involved in organizing the citizens, and I think Carol Maloney they've gotten some bills passed that allot some money for the cleanup, and the money was supposedly allotted at one point, and then it got taken back, and they had to fight for that to have the money put back.
Now, was this money for the people whose lives are damaged, lives are destroyed?
Right, and also for the cleanup. But there's just been a whole lot of stuff around that, and I can't follow myself. It got confusing trying to follow that particular aspect of it. I mean, recently there was $7 million reallotted or allotted for another cleanup. But the complaint from everybody is still that it's the same basic idea as before. It's not testing for everything. It's not a thorough cleanup. And basically they're calling it a fake cleanup, which they did way back then. So there's another kind of round of covering up and not doing the right thing.
Would you ever have a feeling that what they want to do is give you the idea, we're really going to do something now. We're going to have another committee. We're going to have another investigation. Well, we're really not going to do anything, but you're going to feel that we're doing something, and that's really what it's all about. It's about perception on the part of the people that the government is really concerned about this terrible tragedy, but the reality is they're not.
Yeah, I sometimes get that feeling, unfortunately. And that's kind of sad, because I've always thought in America, it's we the people, the government, and that in a representative democracy or republic, that we're supposed to have input into that, and that those we elect are supposed to be concerned.
Well, of course, I think those of you who saw the president's interview on Sunday evening on CBS, well, of course, they pointed out that only 30% of the people now support the president's position in Iraq, and he said, I don't care. I'm going to make the decision. And they said, but the majority of the elected representatives are against your position. I don't care. I'm going to do what I want to. I am the commander-in-chief. And you have to wonder, do we have a president? Do we have an executive to carry out the directions of the people, or an authoritarian figure in society?
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Penny Little, and we're talking about her video, Dust and Deceit. And, of course, going into this really terrible situation and the health problems that arose because of this massive cloud of dust that seemed to permeate every aspect of, you know, what's a large area? What was it, about half of, was this on Long Island?
It was down in Manhattan, lower Manhattan, and it covered that entire area. And the plume itself extended outward, probably to Jersey and Brooklyn. They never did proper tests, so they will never know exactly what happened. They should have been testing in concentric circles from ground zero itself, and then extending outward to see how far the contamination went. They never tested it.
Well, of course, the appearance of that dust cloud was almost like this sort of a cloud you get from the volcano. I mean, this massive amount of dust. We've never seen anything quite like that with any other building coming down, have we?
No. There's never been quite an environmental disaster like this particular one. One of the people I interviewed, Marjorie Clark, is a hazardous waste specialist, and she basically said it was like four environmental disasters rolled into one. There was like, it looked like a volcano with the volcanic ash, and then it was also an asbestos factory and a crematorium because of all the bodies that were burning, and a giant incinerator. And think about that burning for months in your neighborhood.
And I've never quite understood why it burned for months. You would have thought that they could have just poured enough water on it and stopped the fires.
Now, that was always a question I had. I have no idea.
Well, does anybody have any idea why it burned so long and why there was, well, I don't think you got into that, but there are many, many people, and we've seen pictures of the molten metal down there in the basement weeks after the planes hit the buildings. Why it would be in the basement and molten metal? You got to get awful hot to get molten metal there. So there are
right.
A lot of unanswered questions. And certainly, as I watched your film, I had the feeling that you had a lot of unanswered questions as well.
Well, yes, I do have a lot of unanswered questions. That was fun. That was a mystery to me. And as I investigated further, I found out that no steel frame building has ever come down from fire. How hot does steel have to burn at for it to just come down like that? None of that made any sense to me. But again, for my particular film, I wanted to focus on things that weren't speculative, things that could be proven.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Penny Little. Her DVD is Death, Dust, and Deceit. And Penny, how can people get in touch with you? How can people get copies of your DVD?
Well, they can go to the website, 911dust.org, and there's information about the film there. You can also buy the film there. There's several other 911 sites that are selling the film, which I'm really pleased about, because this is an important issue that hasn't been covered by the mainstream, just in little dribs and drabs here and there. But you talk to people all across America, oh, yeah, the environmental disaster after 9/11. They're going, what? Well, I kind of heard about the dust. There was one little special. But it was really almost a media blackout. So I'm really, really pleased that some people have sort of taken this issue up and are exposing the lies of 9/11 and this particular set of lies, because it is impacting a lot of people who are our heroes. These were the people that went down there, the people that went back to work, that basically got New York City up and running again. So this issue is one of those issues where if you follow it through to the end, you find that trail of lies, the trail of deceit. So, yes, you can find more information at 911dust.org. And I don't get an opportunity to update as much as I would like on the site about things that people can do if they're ill, but I've been trying to keep up with some of the news there. So, when developments do happen.
And really, there are really tens of thousands of people who are permanently incapacitated. And this one group of 8,000 I've read about, over 400 of them You know, over 400 of them have cancers of one sort or another. So obviously there's something here in that dust that destroyed the immune system and made the people ever so much more susceptible to cancer. Well, our telephone number, if you're out there across America, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Penny on this specific subject, and that is, of course, the dust, the incapacity of the people afterwards, the Environmental Protection Agency's planned program of deceit and deception, encouraging people to go back to work, telling them it was safe when they knew it wasn't. And then, of course, the lies, the efforts to cover up what had really taken place, because that's what's so unconscionable, and the pressure that was put from the White House on the Environmental Agency to alter their report. When the EPA knew that it was toxic, and they were told to alter their report and say it was the dust wasn't toxic, of course, sacrificing the lives of literally tens of thousands of the people who worked there in that toxic soup with toxic environment. Well, I know certainly you had a interview. Was that gentleman a fireman or a policeman? He was rather heavy set.
All right, that was Phil McArdle. He's from the Uniformed Firefighters Association. And he basically, his lungs are shot because of 9/11. He had pulmonary tests done, and he basically had to retire. You know, once you can't wear the equipment, the all of that kind of stuff, you can't perform the duties of a firefighter. And there are quite a few. I don't know what the numbers are now of how many of each firefighters group had to go into early retirement, but basically he said the numbers are staggering.
It really is. I'm sure it is. Well, let's go to Steve, who's calling us from Salinas, California. Steve, did you have a question for our guest?
Well, I do have a question for both of you, if I may. The 1,100 people, and I've heard you make the comment so often, are you suggesting or could you suggest that either they did not exist or if they were vaporized, how could that be possible? I'll take my comment off the air.
All right, fine. Well, Steve is commenting on something I have said a number of times, and it's true. We've checked this out, that there are 1,100 bodies that have never been found. No fragment of bone, nothing. And, of course, do you have any comment on that at all before I give my opinion on that, Penny?
Well, I think I said what I had to say about it, but, how did that happen? That's my question.
All right, and that basically is a very good way to approach this, because, Steve, I'm not going to tell you what I think. I'm going to ask a question to try to get other people to think. And I simply ask the question, what happened to those 1,100 bodies? Were they crushed when the buildings collapsed, because that's what we're told, or were they vaporized when the buildings exploded? People haven't thought of them exploding, but how do you explain the vaporization of 1,100 bodies? I don't know how else you would explain it, and how could that have happened? What really happened that morning that we've not been told about? That's the reason I make that statement. I'm trying to get people to think. And one of the harder things today is to get people to use the good mind that God gave them. We are conditioned, we're entertained, we watch a television, we see the flashing lights, we hear the music, our minds are turned off, and we certainly are eating and drinking many things that have a profound impact on our ability to think. And I'm just trying to break through that veneer and try to get people to begin to ask serious questions. And I will tell you, once you begin to ask those questions, your whole life will change. That's what happened to me 44 years ago when I began to see the world differently. Well, we've got Ken calling. Hi, Ken. How are you doing there?
I can hardly hear you.
Whereabouts are you, Ken?
Watsonville. I'm chemically ill, Ken.
All right, fine. Do you have a question?
Yes. In other words, both on it. Several years ago, Tom Cahill, UC atmospheric physicist, went to New York for that situation, and he said that the government was lying. And I had talked to his right-hand person, and she told me that they refused to pay the bill for his visit. Now, maybe a year ago or half a year ago, I heard him that he had changed his mind on something. I was real happy. I was wondering if he rolled over on the deal of claiming the toxicity was tremendous in New York and they lied.
I really don't know. It's all about it, Ken. I'm sorry I can't help you.
And I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that other than I know that he originally had said the government was lying. The reports were not correct.
Oh, no. Do you then know who Tom Cahill is, Penny?
Yes.
All right, fine. So that's all we can tell you, Ken.
Okay, thank you.
God bless, and thanks very much. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And tremendous pressure is put on people to alter their opinions that go along with the official party line. If there's nothing to conceal, why would you threaten people, as has happened to a number of people that I've interviewed or talked to, who've had their lives threatened for coming out with an official story that's different than the official government one? Now, this is covered in my December newsletter, and any of you would like to get that December newsletter, which is the conclusion of a five-part series we've been writing, and where I tell you what I think really happened that morning and why I think it happened that morning. Anyway, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of our December newsletter, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to get a free copy of the December newsletter, or if you'd like, of course, to see all of the newsletters are posted at RadioLiberty.com. Well, Penny, what sort of response have you gotten from your video? And what do people say about it when they see it?
Well, I've had only one showing, a salon showing in Santa Barbara, and it's going to be in the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. So I haven't seen a big audience response. But from the salon showing, people cried. People were really upset. People didn't know a lot about this before, and now they suddenly went, whoa, I didn't know that that was happening, and they were enraged. And that's what I really hope happens. I hope people feel enough to want to do something. And some of the victims who have seen it or some of the people who are in it really love the film because I made the film for them. And I wanted to respect them and make sure that their voices were heard in a way that they wanted them to be heard. And so far, there's been a really good response to the film. I just got an email basically from a friend who is one of my worst critics, and she loved the film. She said, with every fact, you just put an emotional hammer in it. So I was really pleased with that.
Well, you really want to have a critic there, because that way, when they praise you, you know it's got to be good. Most people will say, "Oh, that's great," but when your critic praises you, then you know you've really accomplished something.
Right, and I'm really hoping that one of my film mentors, when he sees it, Ron Dexter, will like the film. He'll probably say it's too long, but I thought it was just right. There was so much information. It was really hard to keep it down to an hour, which is what I wanted to do.
Well, how long is it? It was a little over an hour.
It's actually an hour, and then there's two extras on the DVD. There's Rachel's story, and then there's William Rodriguez's story.
Well, why don't you tell the William Rodriguez story? Because that, to me, is so important. And that's on the extra DVD there? Or there's,
yeah, it's on the extras. Well, Willie was a janitor in World Trade Center number 1, and he had the key to the elevator shaft. The other people who had the keys on that morning ran out. They were nowhere to be found. So he went back into the building many, many times to rescue people, and he opened those doors, and they went up there with the firemen and helped them get people out. Now, the interesting thing about his story is that he was in the basement, and one of the guys that he pulled out came out of there yelling explosion, and his skin was falling off of his arm like he'd just been burnt. And Willie testified before the 9/11, that was Philippe David, I think, was his name, the guy. Willie testified before the 9/11 commission behind closed doors. They ignored his testimony, but he talked about hearing explosions.
And those explosions...
And they didn't want to know about those explosions. They didn't want that to be part of the official story or the official 9/11 commission report.
And of course, those explosions were... there was one massive explosion in the basement of the building before the plane hit the upper part of the building. But
exactly.
How could that possibly have been? How would Osama bin Laden been able to arrange that for an explosion in the basement of the building? And that was what actually had burned Philippe David.
Exactly. And so the other thing is that William also talked about the elevator shaft where the fire, they were full of water. So the system worked. They filled up with water. So that means that the government theory that the heat traveled down the sink, you know, using the elevator shafts as a sink, as a heat sink, that doesn't make any sense. So there are things about William's story that kind of put some holes in the official government report.
And that's, of course, why his testimony was never heard in public and why it was sealed for 50 years, along with the testimony of 1,100 other people, so the American people would never learn what happened that morning. Because if they did not tell us the truth, then maybe it means that the war in Afghanistan was unnecessary, the current war in Iraq is unnecessary, the coming war with Iran is unnecessary, and, well, it's going to be very interesting. I hope and pray that I'm wrong about Iran. Let's go to Greg, who's calling from Ohio. Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. How are you listening on shortwave or the Internet?
On the Internet.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to talk to you about if you were ever going to, if you'd ever have Kathy O'Brien on.
We had her on just on Monday. You missed Kathy.
Did you really?
I did. Shame on you.
Oh, darn it. I really liked it. Heard what you had to say.
Well, you can listen to her program. It'll be archived in the next day or two at our website at RadioLiberty.com. It'll be archived, actually. It's Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien, and they were my guests on Monday afternoon just 2 days ago.
Oh, darn. I think I missed that. I was going to see if anybody was outraged enough, because I've been calling Senator Byrd's office, just seeing if he would apologize to her for what he did to her out of the book. It's the book Transformation of America.
Right. Well, that's a little off the subject, but I certainly we'll get her on again so we can talk about it. And anybody who'd like to read the book Kathy and Mark wrote, they're both posted on our website, Transformation of America and Access Denied. Hey, look, thanks so very much for calling, Greg.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Bye.
Okay, fine. Well, if you have a question on today's program, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Penny has done a magnificent job. It's a very well-designed, well-done film, a very emotional film. As you talk to these people, you get to know them. And these are people who were there, and, of course, they were lied to, and their lives have been destroyed. Many of them are seriously incapacitated because the government deceived them, and they believed the government when they told them there was nothing to worry about. The air was perfectly safe. And I think, of course, the most devastating thing we've mentioned before is that this documents and shows you many of the reports wherein the EPA knew that the air was toxic, and pressure was brought to bear on the EPA from the White House to lie. And unfortunately, the government officials did, and Kristen Todd Whitney did, and tens of thousands of people's lives are destroyed. And we don't know how many have cancer, but in this one group, 400, and it's probably thousands. So, Penny, where do you go from here?
Well, I'm hoping to get this film as widespread as possible so that people know about it, because once I'm in the black with it, I intend to donate 50% to the victims. And, I mean, I'm trying to keep up with them and how they're doing. I keep up pretty seriously with Rachel, and I've called most of the other people that are in the film just to see how they are. And I just really want this issue to get wide exposure. I mean, partly because people like Giuliani are putting in a bid for the president, or they're examining that. People like that shouldn't be allowed in office.
You're talking about Mayor Giuliani.
Mayor Giuliani,
who's
right.
been praised by the media, and people have never talked about his deceit and his deception and the part that he played, you know, in this terrible tragedy. And he is being built up, you know, as this great hero pulling the city together. And, of course, it's all showbiz. It doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe in it. People will believe that Mayor Giuliani was the hero of 911 rather than one of the villains. Well, we're going to be back here in a few moments to wrap up our program. Again, the website is www.911dust.org. That's www.911dust.org. It's an excellent video. Well, Penny, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, great. Well, I was thinking as you were talking, I've watched this film as I've edited it probably thousands of times, and I've lived with these people. And when I've seen, every time I've seen the film through to the very end, I cry. It just makes me so sad. And it happens at that moment where Rachel Hughes says, "None of this is ever going to change unless we start telling the truth about what really happened." And to me, that's the key here. You can't make the changes unless you tell the truth. And that's what the American people need to know. The American people need to know the truth.
And, of course, the film actually ends when Rachel Hughes is there, of course, giving this sort of little monologue as she's talking. Her life has been destroyed. And how did it happen? Well, she was just a good person. She wanted to volunteer to go down to help the people who were searching for the bodies and who were working down there.
Right. She wanted to help. And so she volunteered down at the pile for 4 days. And then she continued to work in the neighborhood. And so she was given those reassurances that were just blasted over and over again in the media. If you hear it enough times, you begin to believe it. And even if there's a disconnect where you think this can't be right, when you hear authorities telling you the air is safe to breathe, well, you kind of believe it. And so now thousands of people are ill. And that's a crime.
Well, I think there are lots of things there that we've never been told the truth about. But I think what you've done is you've taken a very important issue and developed the whole idea. And certainly somebody had to do it. I'm glad somebody like you did it, who had the talent and the ability to take a story and make it very real for the watcher, so that you're never bored at all. You're sitting on the edge of your seat waiting for the next series of figures to come up. Well, do you have a parting thought for our listeners here before we let you go?
Well, I think the parting thought is that do something. Whatever it is that you see around you, begin where you are and do something about it, because the power of an individual is greater than you think.
And I think you're absolutely right. And I've seen sometimes when one or two, or maybe in the case of the Jersey girls, 4 women who lost their husbands in the 911 attack, were able actually to get 2 major congressional investigations. Now, I think that they're important, not because of what was brought out, but by what was concealed by those investigations. 4 women were able to force Congress to have an investigation. You could do the same. Thanks so much, Penny.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Peggy Little, and she did a good job, and really on this video. We carry actually 5 videos here regularly, but 911, Press for the Truth, the story of the Jersey girls, the 4 widows who lost their husbands in the building's collapse, and then, of course, the 911 mysteries, and Press for the, Terror Storm in Plain Sight, and The Day That Changed America Forever. And if you're, of course, interested in getting Peggy Little a video, why, you can call us. If you can't get through to her, we might even carry her video. I think it's very good. We've just got so many right now. We have a new 4 tapes out on why did the buildings come down? The interview with William Rodriguez, who was there that morning. Of course, what happened to him after he tried to tell the people about the explosion in the basement of the building and the threatening calls and people breaking into his home and of course, making sure he couldn't get a job. And the repeated death threats. Ladies and gentlemen, this is standard operating procedure for anybody who tries to tell the truth about what happened on 911. You'll want to hear my interview with William Rodriguez. It's in the four-tape set, Why Did the Buildings Come Down? And then, of course, we have so much other material on what happened on 911, 911 update. We have the five DVDs we're carrying, and certainly they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. But, of course, the real crux of the whole story is the fact that on the morning of 911, there were a number of military exercises, somewhere between 5 and 15 different military exercises. Some of them involved terrorists hijacking planes and crashing them into buildings. And at one time, the FAA and NORAD were chasing 29 different hijackings. How could that have happened? How did Osama bin Laden manage to implant all those false images on the screens at FAA and NORAD that morning so that there was no military response, effectively, against the hijackers? Doesn't make sense. Unless, of course, maybe nothing we've been told is true. And, of course, this is covered very well in my latest newsletter, the documentation of what really happened. And we know what happened that morning because, of course, we read the complete testimony of there in 911, and we read the testimony of Norman Mineta, who told us who was in charge that morning and what really happened when the plane was coming into the Pentagon. You will certainly want, of course, to get the little pamphlets we have. The three pamphlets called Foreknowledge 911. That's Foreknowledge 911. And, of course, we'll soon have the five latest newsletters put together so that you can will have this as ready access to understand, because there's no way we're going to be able to stop the coming war with Iran unless we understand what happened that morning. And if you think we're going to have just a little tea time war when we go to war with Iran, and it'll all be over very, very soon, you don't understand the master plan. Well, what's behind it? You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. The book, the video, the DVD, it's all the same story. You need to get the new book we're carrying, Satanic Crimes. You need to get Malachi Martin's, Father Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil. You need to get the videos we carry. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle. And then, of course, we hope that you'll be beginning to make your own spiritual preparation for this. We're actually, if you haven't read it, carrying Corey Ten Boom's book, The Hiding Place, the story of a young woman in Nazi Germany who was taken to a concentration camp. And how did she cope with this horrible situation? You want to get our new four-tape set on the Military Commission Act. You want to get our material on the concentration camps here in America. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are concentration camps in America, and they're preparing to use them. That's why, of course, they've changed the laws and done away with the Posse Comitatus Act, why they're certainly refurbishing the Japanese prison camps and building new ones. Halliburton is building them. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.